Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me in that other box, that is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Hello, I am doing fantastic today.
Guess what? We are in the future right now.
We are.
We just concluded our interview with our guest this week. We had to do it all out of order because we had a limited time with our guest. But this was an exciting show, was it not?
It's big steps for us. We've evolved today. We grew up a little bit. We got a little bigger, which is ironic given the show's content.
Well, before we kick it over there, we're going to tell you what you're actually listening to, folks. This is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is a show where Andy and I bring on an industry guest, be it a director, a game designer, an artist, or voice actor in the video games industry, now including AAA. It was always the indie games, but now we're in the AAA first party space.
Oh boy.
Andy. We did it. We finally did it.
Oh boy.
And
we've arrived.
We bring them on to tell us their story. We want to be a platform for all these developers to tell their story, how they got started, all that fun stuff. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean, and of course on Apple, on Google, on Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you could find podcasts, you could find this. And of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/DualScreensTV. If you like this show and you want to listen to us do other shows, you don't have to subscribe anywhere else. On the same channel, we have other shows like the Dual Screens Gamescast, and we also have our seasonal content, which we're about to wrap up season one of Dual Screens Versus. So please, if you like what you're about to listen to or watch, if you like what we do, please consider backing us, supporting us on patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, Colton the Apprentice Nestler and FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without your support, and we have a ton of incentives on our Patreon. For $1, you get into our VIP Discord where you could chat with us, indie developers, each other. We're in there all day talking to you guys. It's a great place to share feedback on the shows and other stuff that you want us to cover on our shows, all that kind of things. You also get a bonus episode that you vote the topic of each and every month, and that's just for $1. And there's so many more. There's a $3, a $5, a $10. Really, it's a great deal, and it helps us out tremendously. Andy, with that being said...
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's
Everybody,
do it.
Let's kick it over to Andy and Steve from the past. Hello, everybody. It's me. It's Steve. It's Andy. And joining us this week is Adam Brenneke. Is that correct? Am I saying that right?
It's Brenneke.
Brenneke. See? It's
the one time you don't ask.
The wrong emphasis on the different
syllables. That's all right.
So here's the thing. I watched like three or four interviews where and every single person introduced you differently.
Yeah. My last name's crazy, so no worries.
Adam is the game director and producer of a little teeny tiny little miniature game called Grounded. Adam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
No, thank you for coming on here. This is big for us. We're so thrilled to have you here. Played all night. Played Grounded all night last night, and I'm a big tired boy today. we have so much to ask you. Why don't I kick it to you first, because you've been like writing thoughts, ideas, everything, how you wanted to steer this thing. So let me put this baby bird into your hands and you could start us off.
For sure. I think before we get into what Grounded is, sure, and all that fun stuff, let's talk about some stats.
Oh, God, stats, yes. Let's
baby.
Do it.
Yeah. So Grounded hits 1 million players in 48 hours. The number one best-selling game on Steam. What is your reaction to that as this game's lead game designer? What does it make you feel deep in this heart-shaped part
solar
of your body?
Plexus.
So yeah, it's pretty amazing, and we feel very, very blessed for such a overwhelmingly positive reception to the game, and having so many players play the game is awesome too, because we're getting so much good feedback from all sorts of different players, and we're definitely taking all that feedback in and looking at ways of how to make the game better. And I think that's the power of game preview and early access, is being able to make the game better. So we're kind of doing that right now. So we didn't really get a chance to really take a huge breath. We're just back at it and making more cool stuff for Grounded.
That's awesome. Can we talk about, you guys are on, the game is on Game Pass. That's how I'm playing it. But you were still number one on Steam. what are the conversations like internally when the decision is made, hey, we're going to be on this subscription service, but we're also going to sell the thing? Like, how do you internally balance that act?
I think it's awesome, because with Game Pass, like, there's, especially, you know, if you're on the fence, if you're like, hey, survival games aren't my thing, the barrier to entry, if you're a subscriber, is nothing. You know, you just have to download it. And I think that's awesome. Like, for me, it's getting as many people playing as possible. That's my goal. And Game Pass allows us to have such a huge audience to be able to, you know, jump in and check the game out. And I think that's super, super powerful. And hey, if Game Pass isn't your thing, you still have, you know, a choice to purchase it and join in that way too. So you know, just giving people options, and it's awesome that, you know, as you said, it was one of the best sellers on Steam, and the game's doing really well even if it is on Game Pass.
All right, so why don't we talk a little bit about Grounded? Let's get into let's ground this and talk about
Grounded. No puns.
You're wasting no time, are you?
We're getting in there. We're getting in there. Well, believe me, they're coming. much like those GD spiders, but we'll get into that later. So give us the elevator pitch. If you're telling a gamer who has no idea what Grounded is, what is Grounded?
Yeah, so Grounded is a survival adventure game where you are shrunk with potentially four or three other people to the size of ants, and you are stuck in a backyard environment where there's a horde of other insects that are fighting to survive just like you are. And with survival games, there's base building, crafting, and you can hunt and kill insects and craft stuff out of their guts and their legs. And there's also a story that you can go through, and that's, we're just laying the groundwork for the story, but it's a mystery of like why you're here, and you have to discover that, like, hey, what who put me here, who owns this house, who's this robot named Burgle, how does this all fit together? So we are unveiling that mystery over the course of early access. And the other thing that I think sets Grounded apart from other survival games is the world is a living place. So you have all these interactable objects, you know, the grass, you can craft your base out of the grass blades and cut all the grass down in the yard. You can also, you know, just observe the insect life around you and see, you know, how the different insects interact with each other. And you can also interact with that insect life as well by, you know, if you start killing insects, they'll behave differently. And I think that's a really, really cool thing just to explore in a sandbox environment, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I was going to say, as we talk about insects a lot, I want to kind of call in your mental fortitude right now into question. I feel,
oh my,
as you know, it takes a special kind of person to make a ladybug terrifying. So what goes into that?
it kind of fits with the scale. So one thing that we look at is like, hey, we want the player to be at this certain size. And it's roughly, you're 1 centimeter tall, roughly. And so we kind of compared that, you know, the player character with all these different insects and say like, okay, that ladybug's actually pretty big and it looks like a tank. So that's kind of like where that inspiration came from, of making the ladybug like a tank. And you know, they're not aggressive at first unless you, you know, aggravate it. But yeah, I think that's something that we're like looking at as a, you know, at that scale, you want to be able to interact and fight these creatures. So like what types of, you know, behaviors and, you know, would it act like armor? Would it not act like armor? So I think that's a fun thing to mess around with as a developer.
One of the things I think you guys nailed brilliantly is it's really easy to just say, oh yeah, it's just reskinned run-of-the-mill monsters. Like you could replace a ladybug with, a rhino. You know, it's just a big thing, like it's just scale. But like when you're actually playing it and you're interacting with all of the different objects and you're kind of exploring a little bit and you look up, especially I saw somebody that built a tower so high that they essentially hit the ceiling of the game, like whatever that,
yes.
whatever that is.
And I you saw can, that too.
And you can see other houses in the neighborhood. You can see the entire neighborhood. Like you could actually see the scale of what's happening around you. And I want to commend you on that, because I think you guys really did nail that. It doesn't just feel like a run-of-the-mill survival game just with a different skin twist, you know, like a different look. It really does have a unique... You do feel like you're part of a unique world, whether that's how the characters are speaking to each other, whether it's the mystery of you know, going underground and seeing these wires and then this, like, underground lab and, like, all this really, really cool stuff. So I do want to commend you with
that. Thanks for pointing that out. It's very intentional. Like, we've iterated over, like, it's, you know, even, like, the dirt, and it's kind of silly to talk about, but, like, the dirt of the world, you know, if you just start with a terrain, like a typical game, like it just doesn't look like it has the right scale. So the artists on my team are so talented, and I'm so blessed to have some of these guys on my team. Kaz Aruga and Sean Dunny and John Lewis, those guys like spent so much time like just looking at the scale, and they have these like it's a procedural like dirt clump that they can kind of place around to kind of vary that terrain. So like, when you're looking at it, you know, it doesn't feel like the typical game terrain. And I think that's really cool. We do that with all the aspects of the game, like how water looks, you know, how that dewdrop like bounces and feels. We talk about it like, hey, this doesn't feel right to scale. Like, how can we make this feel better if you are, you know, 1 centimeter tall?
Yeah, I mean, we've had discussions about Spider-Man puddle, so I don't think dirt isn't that far removed from the conversation. It's a totally valid talking point. What's been the biggest eye-opener for you guys since you've launched this game in its preview state in terms of community feedback? Like, your biggest, why didn't we think of that sort of reaction?
I think it's just, you know, for me, it's just how many people are playing and how much feedback we've gotten, and just the so many people are so excited about the game. And yes, like, it's one of those things where you, like, before you ship a game, you have no idea like of how people are going to receive it. And I think that's the thing that I'm just super just stoked. And like, I'm just so like blessed and pleased of like how people are receiving it. Cause that just means like we got something good. We have a good foundation, and we can just like kind of just keep building and building on top of this foundation to make a, you know, a truly, truly excellent game. And that for me is like the biggest thing. I'm super impressed with all the crazy base building.
Yeah.
You know, like, like the pirate ship on the pond, being able to like, one thing that we noticed is that players have used the weapon rack and the dummy for the armor, like in different ways of like making decorations in their base, which we never thought of. So there's a lot of like pretty neat things that we've discovered where we're like, hey, we like even just like building like trampoline forts and stuff like that, where it's just amazing how creative people, you know, can be given even just, I feel like it's pretty limited set of tools. But like people are just so creative, and it just blows us away as a team. We share this stuff all the time on our chat channel, and we're just like, wow, like super impressed with people's like just creativity and I love it. Like, and we just want to add more stuff for people to mess around with.
What kind of, as a designer, as the lead designer, as a, you know, a developer, what kind of feedback from your player base is the best kind of feedback that you get? Like, not the best as far as like making you feel good, but like useful for you guys as a team.
I think everything is super useful. You know, if there's something that you run into that it just like aggravates you, like, I think those are the good, that's super good feedback. Cause if there's anything that like makes you just like want to just like punch the television, like we don't want those moments, right? Unless it's a good moment. Like if it's just like one of those like challenge things where you're like, you know, just, you know, you can do it, but like you just haven't been able to master it yet. Those are always fun, but like
spiders.
if it's something where it's just like, man, this game is just like just making me angry, you know, we want to resolve that stuff. If there's like things that are just like, hey, this is, just super frustrating. We want to, you know, take a look at if we can resolve those issues. And then I think, like, overall, just, you know, combat is a big one for us. Like, how do we make combat better? And we've been looking at videos of, you know, pro people. And we're definitely polishing that stuff up as well. So one thing that we're looking at is how to make combat a little more interesting with not only different weapons and stuff, but creature attacks. So we're looking at it from the creature's perspective of, like, hey, creatures feel a little bit robotic in combat. How can we improve that experience? Right. So there's everything. Everything is good feedback. So, you know, don't be, I want people to share it. So don't be afraid to share your thoughts on the game.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, so you mentioned earlier how there's really no time for you, for the team to breathe after you release a game like this. So it's like, you know, it's an early preview, but there's still a lot of work to be done. It's just, you have great foundation, but there's more coming down the pipeline. What is your next big update focusing on for Grounded?
Yeah, so we are planning on releasing on our first monthly update at the end of August. And we want to do monthly updates. So I think it's a perfect fit for Game Pass as well. So if you're a Game Pass subscriber, you know, you can just boot up the game again and check out the new content. So it's, I think that will work really well. Yeah, we want to, you know, we're first and foremost focused on, like, the quality of life stuff. If there's, like, little things that we can do to improve the experience, you know, fixing issues is another priority for us of, like, hey, like, you know, we don't want bad experiences of, you know, save games not working or, you know, bases that just disappear for whatever reason. We definitely want to solve that stuff. And we're working with the community, getting save games from people and checking out those issues and making sure that, like, everyone's experience is really good. On the flip side, we are adding more stuff, of course, for our August update. So we have a you know, lots of little things, as I said, like the quality of life stuff, but we also have a couple big features. I'm not super ready to talk about that yet because we want to keep it, you know, a surprise. But yeah, we do have, you know, some new crafting, a new creature, and a couple other new fun stuff to for players to mess around with.
Now, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Steven.
I want to speak about the relationship between you know, you guys and Microsoft and all that. Was this game in development, or what stage of development was this, if it was still in development before the acquisition with Microsoft?
Yeah, so we actually started this before the acquisition. Sure. And it was pretty early on, so it was an early prototype of the game, and we had you know, we had spiders in the game, we had some of the early survival game mechanics in the game, and we showed it to Microsoft and they were just like, cool, like, keep working on it. And we're like, hey, we want to do this, like, early access game preview. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, cool. Just keep doing it. And we're like, okay.
That's awesome.
So they were just like, looks good. Just keep working on the game. And that's what we did. And, you know, I think they were super supportive. Like, everyone at Microsoft, everyone that I've, have been in meetings with, and the marketing folks, all the biz people, they're all super, super supportive and super helpful. And they just, you know, they're primarily there just to make, you know, the game better in any way that they possibly can. The other thing that was super awesome is we were able to work directly with the user research lab at Microsoft. They helped us with the arachnophobia mode. They helped us with a lot of, like, the tutorialization of the game and the accessibility of the game. So that was super nice to be able to use those, that team in developing, you know, a better onboarding experience. And I think that has helped a lot for how we do the tutorialization in the game, which is also very important to us to make sure that the learning curve is pretty easy to get into.
One of our listeners, Harry, actually wanted to ask, how did the idea of the arachnophobia accommodation start? How did that, what were those conversations like?
Yeah, so that was, right after we announced the game at in London. So we did at EXO in London, we announced Grounded, and we were looking at players' reactions to the show floor demo. And we're also looking at just people watching our trailer. And we found a few people just like right when the spider came on screen, they would just like put their hands up and just walk away. And they're like, I can't do this. and it was like, I'm like, and then, you know, we would talk to those people and they're like, no, I can't play this game. And to me, I'm like, hey, like my goal is to make games where people can, you know, have fun and, you know, kind of escape to a different place. And so I was like, hey, maybe there's something that we can do to address this. Like, I would like to see if we can do something, even if this, you know, that fear of spiders is still there. Just, I don't want them just to completely turn off and say like, I can't play this, and just freeze and say like, no way, no way. So if there's any little thing that we could possibly do to help those players, that was my goal. And thankfully, like right at the same time, we started discussions with the user research lab, and that's where that whole arachnophobia discussion came from, and like figuring, like actually doing research and figuring out ways of presenting spiders in a way where that phobia could be reduced. Mm.
See, here's what you do for that. You can tame only spiders in the game and they can make them your best friend. And that's how you essentially...
I don't think you know how arachnophobia works, Andy.
Listen, you confront your fear and then you take away what's scary about it and you make it your best friend. Listen, if you ever watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, it's all about the ant relationship in that movie. So you just have a spider there in its place, and then you want to cry when, you know, when it gets killed.
I don't know.
As you're feeding it oatmeal cream pie filling.
I think you should replace Atreyu with a giant arachnid in Neverending Story so that it could drown in the quicksand and everybody could move on with their life.
Oh, no!
Yeah, one of the challenges with the arachnophobia mode too is we wanted to make sure that you could still play with your friends, even if you had that setting turned on, which is kind of an interesting development problem where that has to be a client side thing only. So like,
right.
You know, if I'm joining my friend, they're okay with spiders, but I'm not. I still want to be able to play with my friend. So, you know, we discussed like, hey, maybe it's a server setting where we can just turn that off and like all the spiders disappear, or, you know, but we felt like that was a compromise to the game experience. So we wanted to, you know, have a mode where you could flip that on and still join any game and be able to play with arachnophobia mode on.
So I haven't tried the arachnophobia mode, so I don't know what it replaces it with, but do the creatures behave the same way? Is it the same, it's the same AI and all that stuff?
Same everything. So same hitbox for combat. So, you know, you can fight the insect exactly the same way. It drops the same stuff. So yeah, we wanted to make sure that experience, like the gameplay wasn't compromised because of you wanting that mode on.
Mm.
And then you guys also have the Ark Broodmother Easter egg boss fight in the game as well. So yes. We're also embracing spiders at the same time, which is great.
That's one thing that we want to spend more time on is creating cooler bosses and more unique bosses. The Hedge Broodmother isn't, in my opinion, isn't really, you know, special in any way. So I would love to make her a special creature and a little more intimidating to fight. So that's something that we're looking at to make, you know, unique creatures that have special names, that have unique traits, and maybe some unique abilities that you'll find and have a little more challenge than the typical spider.
It almost has a miniature, like a miniature MMO feel in the way that you have this open world. You can kind of do whatever you want with your friends, but then you look over there and you're like, nope, I'm definitely not fucking with that thing. Because its eyes are red, and I'm not messing with that right now. Maybe later, when I have enough spears to chuck at the damn thing. But it kind of has that little carrot at the end of the stick. Like, oh, I wonder what's over there. And then you see the creature, and you're like, maybe later. Very reminiscent. And I'm sure that comes from probably, I would assume, the Pillars development, where, you know, the RPG of you know, leveling up and things being a little bit more challenging as you move on, creative ways to solve problems, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. And we look at like when we present a creature, like, can you immediately tell what, if it's hostile or or friendly, just by the design and art design of the creature. So that's something that's very, very well thought out by the art team. And, you know, a lot of the friendlier creatures are a little bit sillier looking, and the more hostile creatures are a lot more threatening looking. So that's definitely intentional. So, you know, immediately when you see something on the horizon, you can kind of get a sense of like, oh, is that thing going to eat me or can I eat it?
That's actually a good segue for a listener question. This comes from Billy the Door. Having worked on a lot of single-player RPGs, what were some lessons learned or hurdles you had to cross in creating a multiplayer-centric game?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of problems when trying to, you know, move our traditional RPG single-player experience to a multiplayer game. For example, like conversations, for example, is like a big one for us. Is like, how do you make conversations interesting when there's multiple players? So we kind of relied more on telling the story through chatter, audio logs, which can be done at your own pace. Burgle is right now the only like traditional obsidian conversation in the game. But we wanted to make that pretty short and sweet, where you can kind of just get into the menus and out of the menus very quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the challenges. I think also just, as we were kind of touching on combat, like how do you make the combat experience more fun with multiplayer? And, you know, if you have multiple players bashing on something all at the same time, like, can you make that more interesting when it's not just like your NPC or your companions fighting it? You know, they're all human controlled characters. Like, how do you make that experience more like fun for the entire group? So that's something else that is pretty challenging. But we look at every feature and say, like, you know, that's something that I do as the director, is I like poke our team, I poke the team and say, like, hey, like, this is a cool feature. Like, is there any way that we can make this cooler in a multiplayer experience?
I have a question here from Zyger, listener of the show here. He asked a lot of questions, but I find this one, you've already answered a couple of them, so I want to bounce to the last one that he has here. Has Grounded's success sparked any interest internally in the studio to create games outside of the single-player RPG space? So have you kind of like, has your team kind of sparked a little interest in others to say, hey, I kind of want to work on something like this. I want to do something a little different.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I feel like at Obsidian, we try to do, like, there's hardly any games that we've done that are alike. So we tend to do pretty wild things with our, you know, like, we've done a tank MMO at Obsidian, which was Armored Warfare. I've worked on Neverwinter Nights 2 way back in the day, which had a lot of multiplayer features. Yeah, we're definitely, you know, open to multiplayer games and looking at that type of experience. And even like Dungeon Siege 3, which is a game that I, you know, it was an action RPG, but it was like a couch co-op multiplayer game. So like we've tried our hand at multiplayer games quite a few times at Obsidian. And I think, you know, it's something that we're always up for. So if we think that will add to the experience and make the game better, I think we're always up for discussing whether or not to add multiplayer to our games.
Tell us something about Grounded that no one else knows.
Oh, what could I say? Here's one. So this is like an Easter egg that we put in the game. And a lot of people have posted screenshots. You might have seen the screenshot. That is something that I drew and someone else modified. There's a little character that we hid in the game that if you go on like Reddit, for example, you'll find a picture of this. And it's some silly thing that actually is there. That is a diagram of something. I won't say what it is, but there is something behind that. I don't think anyone will ever figure it out, but that is a drawing I did for the team at one point for Grounded.
The plot thickens, Andy. The plot thickens.
Yeah, it really does. The mystery just keeps going deeper and deeper.
We've been pretty, I guess, mysterious. Like, people have asked us, what the heck is that? And we've been kind of like, oh, we're not sure. Like, we're not. I'm not going to probably say what it is exactly, but that's a couple more hints for people to speculate on.
But it has an explanation is what you're
trying
to say.
There's an explanation of what it is, yes.
So going back a little bit, you said you had this prototype, you showed it to Microsoft and all that. What's the genesis of Grounded? Like, where did this start? Was this just an idea you had? You threw it on paper. You said, I'll worry about it later after doing X, Y, and Z. Like, how did this come to be?
Yeah. So for the story is pretty cool. Like, so for a long time at Obsidian, we've been wanting to make a survival game, and there's a lot of fans at Obsidian of survival games. And we were working on Pillars of Eternity during that kind of when the survival games kind of blew up. So, you know, it's a new genre of game, and we were working on Pillars, and we were working on Pillars for a very, very long time. And there was another team at Obsidian during that time that tried to get a survival game prototype up and running. It just didn't really work out because they needed to go work on actually the Outer Worlds. So that project never really got off the ground, but there's been a want to do a survival game at Obsidian. And after Deadfire, which is Pillars of Eternity 2, shipped, Fergus was like, hey, what do you want to do next, Adam? And I was like, hey, do you want to try to do a survival game again? And Fergus was like, sure, like, put together a pitch, put together a team. So I kind of thought for a long time, and we brainstormed for hours on what would be the best survival game to do. So we had a fresh start. We could do anything. And there's a lot of traditional survival games pitched of like, hey, what if it was, you know, you're on an island, or you have to survive against like zombies. There's tons of ideas that we threw on the whiteboard. And when we said, hey, what if you were shrunk down and you had to survive in a backyard environment? Immediately, my buddy Bobby Null, who's another lead designer at the studio, unfortunately, he's working on Avowed. He didn't get a chance to work on Grounded, so he's working on our new game. Him and I, were like, oh, there's something here. Because immediately, as designers, our heads just exploded when we said that. There's so many awesome ideas that you could do with this setting, right? And our mind just went wild, our wheels were spinning, and then we pitched it to the studio heads, and they're just like, that is super weird, but for Obsidian especially, but why don't you guys just run with it and see what happens? So that's when we put together the prototype. We're working on the scale of the game and just getting like that perspective in there and seeing the spider for the first time. And once we kind of got all that stuff in, where it's like, yes, there's something here. Like, it's really, really cool to experience this world in this way.
We actually have a related question from one of our listeners, JP. Was there any content that was left unfinished or on the cutting room floor that seemed like the greatest idea at the time but couldn't work? It just didn't make it. What were your Sophie's Choice moments?
That's a great question. So we've actually iterated over a lot of stuff, a lot. So the intro of the game, it's pretty sparse right now, but we've gone through, I think this is our fifth iteration of just the intro and the start of the game. So we had a lot of variations of like, what if Burgle contacted you right when you woke up through like the intercom, through the Scabby. So there's a lot of stuff that we've done to making sure that the survival experience was something where you could kind of explore on your own pace and kind of just take it all in. And that's the direction that we went with, but it took us a long way to get there. So that's just one of the things. I'm trying to think if there's another fun like gameplay thing that we've kind of had to change or modify over the course of development. Can't think of anything off the top of my head. I think the thing that we usually do is if it doesn't really work the first time, we just kind of go back to the drawing board and we just work on it some more and iterate and iterate and iterate. And that ends up creating some cool stuff at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of this kind of delivery system for a game like this. You have again, month after month, attempts to essentially deliver on all the cutting room stuff that you left behind. Like, okay, it didn't work this time, but let's revisit this a month or two from now, see how we can make this work. So nothing is really lost, I would say, in this sort of game design.
Yeah, we definitely prototyped a lot of stuff that's not in the game right now. Like, we've had prototypes of bees and bees behavior. We've done
not the bees.
They're almost gone anyway. You want this to be a realistic survival game, okay? This
is like... we've done prototypes of like creatures climbing over stuff like walls and other objects.
Oh, God, please don't.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. So and if we don't feel like it's like quite there yet, we either take it back and we're like, hey, maybe if we get some more time, we can iterate over this some more.
It's gonna go like survival horror, but then this game is done.
I think the reason why the game clicked, because I don't typically like survival games. Like, I just feel like it's a lot of, it's just a lot of like collecting, hoarding, and then figuring shit out. Like, I don't like that. But I think what drew me to the game and kept me going, you have a very Stranger Things vibe here, where I feel like I like these characters, even though I don't really know them very well. But the fact that they are young, they're children essentially, it's mysterious, they're experiencing this thing, they seem to know kind of what's going on but also kind of not. Much like the Stranger Things cast, where like they're equating it to stuff they know, like D&D, and kind of making sense of that world in that way, but they have no fucking clue what's going on. They have no idea. And that's kind of like how I felt. I'm like, oh, these guys know that somebody somewhere did a shrinking ray, right? Like, they figure that part out, but like, they have no idea what else to do from here, just like me. Can you tell us about getting to that point? Like, why kids? What led you to that decision?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of nostalgia involved.
Sure.
Like, I think the high level experience is being able to get outside, be a kid again, and explore, right? And, you know, I'm in my 30s now, but you know, getting that childlike experience of like getting out, just outside. We definitely set the game also in 1990 to give it also that experience of like, hey, this is before cell phones. This is before all like the social media distractions in our lives. Like, you know, just go out and have fun. And I think that's our high level like pillar of the game, is like, just go out and have fun and be a kid again, right?
Yeah, I think that's you've made the genre so accessible, because I think just the world, the setting alone, makes you want to explore it and see what it's all about. Because, again, I'm not a huge fan of this genre either, like Steven, but just seeing the aesthetic and how it plays, it just pulls you in a way that others just can't do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the power of the setting, too, is that it's a universal fantasy, and also, like, it is very accessible and approachable, and we are all, like... we're all familiar with everything in the yard, right? And I think that's a global thing too. It's not just, you know, a certain, you know, it's not a science fiction thing. Like, we do have some sci-fi stuff in there, but it's definitely something that we all can kind of visualize in our head. And I think that's the power of what we've made.
We have time for one more question.
So should I take it or should you take it?
First things first, this is a quick yes or yes or no, or like very short question, and then I'll kick it to Andy for the final question.
Okay.
But how soon, or if it did it happen already, did you get an NDA from Macaulay Culkin for the whole My Girl thing? Did he not come after you? I was instantly, upon seeing that character, forget the character's name, I was like, wait, that's got to be Macaulay Culkin from My Girl, right?
That is not intentional, so... We actually we modeled that character is based off of someone on the team. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
There you go. That's your alibi. All right, Andy, final question, we'll get out of here.
So looking ahead, not just for Grounded, but for other Obsidian games like Avowed, what excites you most about the Xbox Series X?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm super excited to, you know, get our games running on it and being able to play with all the bells and whistles. I think it's super, super, you know, fun and exciting to be a part of, you know, developing as a first party studio on, you know, on a super, super awesome new console. Like, that's, as a developer, that's like your dream. So I'm just really stoked and excited for the future, and looking forward to making games on it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Adam. We appreciate you joining us. This was awesome. Good luck with everything with Grounded. I can't wait to see what you guys have in the pipeline. I'll be out there. I'll be in the backyard. I'll be waiting.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and it's my pleasure. And I'm so happy that people are enjoying it. And again, this is just the beginning of the journey. We've got a long way to go, and it's just going to keep getting better from here.
Awesome, man. You take care. Thank you so much. Thank you, Andy. Now let's cut it. That's segue over to future Steve and Andy. Hi, future Steve and Andy. Back to you. And we are back to just end the thing. That was an incredible show.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a great show.
That was a great show.
Adam was awesome.
He was.
Grounded. I'm more excited for Grounded than I was even after playing it for like 5 hours last night.
Dude, monthly updates is, I like that a lot. It really makes you want to play.
And the way that they're taking feedback, and they're not cherry picking which feedback they take, and on all that mm-hmm. stuff. Like, it just, it's an awesome thing to see, and I look forward to it. And it really does speak volumes to a platform like Game Pass. So, great, man. Folks, if you like this, why don't you follow us on the social medias? We are at NDS Podcast. I am at Batchild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And you could join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NDS Podcasts. Also, if you want to watch us do streams and stuff, you could go to twitch.tv/dual screen streams. You could also follow my streams if you like at twitch.tv/Batchild. If you want to send us any feedback, please write to us at feedback@ndspodcast.com. Thank you to Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio for our theme song. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all of our cartoon art. And thank you, Matt Murray, for our overlay and our logo. Again, if you want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/ndspodcast. Andy,
mm-hmm.
thank you so much for joining me this fine afternoon.
Yes,
this
and a pleasure. One last thing. I'm going to fill in for Adam here.
Okay.
For all things Grounded, follow them on Twitter at @groundedthegame.
Mm-hmm.
Or for Obsidian updates, it's @Obsidian, also on Twitter.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. And now, Andy, before we go, is there anything you want to tell the listeners?
Oh, we got guests coming up. But again, it's Battle Royale time. It's four guests just fighting for that slot next week. So we'll see who wins.
We're going to have very soon. We're going to have our first three-time guest on the show. Returning.
Yes. Oh my God. He's our second, third time guest on the show.
Wait a minute. Who was our first?
Oh, you think about it. Wait a minute. Shit. No, we've had somebody
where we've done three, but it was different shows.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I don't know if we've had.
Wait, I think it was what's his face? Desmond Wong. We had him on twice, and we said when you come back the third time, you'd be the first third timer talking about Cat Quest 3, but that's not going to happen now.
He's going to be beat.
He's going to get beat. He got beat.
We had Nate Schmold. He came on twice. He did a bonus show with us, I think, on Patreon. He did something small with us there. We had Patrick Hickey Jr., who was on twice and then on Dual Screens Versus. So he's technically a three-time.
Right.
Interesting. But don't worry, folks. It's going to be a jam-packed rest of the month, so look forward to that. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listener. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, everyone out there. Take care, and as always, play the excellence.